also not real. And therefore, if Brahman alone exists, and I know that I exist, because I have the sense of existence at every moment of my existence here, and I'm sentient about it also, I'm aware of it also. In fact, all the experiences are happening in my awareness alone. So if I am existing, and the Vedantic statement that Gaudapada Acharya is affirming again and again is that Brahman alone exists, that means that I must be Brahman. Therefore, as we know, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya Jivo Brahmeva Napara. So this is really the bottom line of this Upanishad, and that is really the bottom line of Karika Gaudapada Acharya. So therefore, in this chapter, he is establishing the fact that this Brahman is Advaitam. This Brahman is one without the second. This Brahman does not have a second. So therefore, if we are seeing anything as second, if we are seeing anything as multiplicity of this universe, or even if I am experiencing my mind, body and intellect, they are also nothing but projections on the Brahman. They are only nothing other than expansion of the Brahman alone. So therefore, I am experiencing Brahman through Brahman, in Brahman. I am experiencing Brahman through Brahman, in Brahman. Therefore, I alone exist. I alone am expanding. So that is really okay. Now, when he establishes that, and the reason,
Vimalji, your voice is going soft and loud. There is some problem with the mic. Sometimes it's soft, sometimes it is loud.
Okay. So let me just use my microphone of the computer.
Yeah.
How is this sound now?
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. So, we were told therefore that dvaita is samsara. Experiencing of duality is samsara. It is universe. It is world. And I become a sansari. I become a player in this world. And experience of Advaita, understanding that there is nothing other than Brahman, abiding in that fact in Advaita is moksha, is freedom, is salvation. So therefore, we were told that we need to remove this projection of multiplicity. We have to remove this projection of multiplicity. Now that means that the projections are seen by the mind. Of course, the eyes and the ears and the nose and all that is also involved. But ultimately, it is the mind that codifies and qualifies what we are seeing, what we are hearing, what we are tasting, touching, smelling, etc., etc. So therefore, it is the mind that needs to be trained. It is the mind that needs to be controlled. It is the mind that needs to be purified. And therefore, Gaudapada Acharya introduces this word called develop Amani Bhava. Amani Bhava means develop mindlessness. Or this is also many times called destruction of mind, Manonasha. So therefore, Amani Bhava and Manonasha leads to a misconception that somehow we have to actually destroy the mind, or somehow we have to annihilate the mind. That is not the purpose. So therefore, yesterday we saw elaborately that that doesn't mean that we destroy the mind. That doesn't mean that we annihilate the mind. That is not required. It is only that we have to make the mind understand so that the progress of the mind is from delusion to knowledge. So the mind actually progresses from an Ajnani mind, from a deluded mind, to a Jnani mind, to a knower mind. It goes from this. This is called Amani Bhava. So this Amani Bhava is now being established in the stanza number 32nd and 33rd. So very quickly we saw in 32nd stanza and 33rd stanza that this Amani Bhava, when it is created, then we will have the Atma Jnana, the knowledge about the self, the knowledge about my real nature. And this knowledge about my real nature will be different and very separate from all the knowledge that I have right now. All the knowledge that I have right now is objective knowledge. It is not subjective knowledge. So it is objectified knowledge. Therefore, there is a subject, there is an object, and there is a relationship between the subject and the object called the knowledge. So there is a knower, there is a known, and the knowledge. Teacher points out, Gaudapada Acharya points out in stanza number 33, that this Atma Jnana is a different type of knowledge. In this, there is no Pramada, there is no Prameya, there is no Pramana. This Tripudi is not there. There is no knower, there is no known, and there is no knowledge. And there is no instrument of knowledge that is required, because the Atman, the Brahman, is self-evident. In fact, Brahman is proclaiming its existence even now. We are just misrepresenting that and associating that with my body, mind, intellect, equipment. So we are actually taking the reflection of the sun as the sun rather than focusing on the sun. So this was made very clear. And so I will know myself through myself, in myself, he says. And for that, really speaking, the revelation of Atma does not even require anything. The revelation in the Atma will actually happen when we have understood the knowledge. So we are requiring the teacher, the guru, and the Shastra, the scriptures, only for them to point out that I have misconceptions about who I am. And they are useful in removing the misconceptions of mine about who I am. But the revelation of who I am, that has to happen in me, by myself. So that much we have seen. Now we come to the 34th stanza, which is where we start with new stanzas. So what is important again is the sublimation of the mind and not a repression of the mind. This is a very important point, because in many other techniques, there is also thought that there has to be a repression of the mind. Forcefully, mind is made thoughtless. This is not really prescribed in the Advaita Vedanta. So a perfectly controlled mind is a sublime mind. A perfectly controlled mind, in the 34th stanza, the teacher will say, Nigruvitasya manas. A mind that is perfectly controlled is the one that is not capable of giving wrong projections, and therefore a perfectly controlled mind is really a sublime mind. And that mind will have a sharp discriminative capacity to distinguish between what is real and what is unreal. And it will not have any sankalpa vikalpa. It will not have any issues that our regular mind has. In other words, because there will be no projections, there will be no sankalpa vikalpa, whether I should do this or I should do that. Whether I should be engaged in activity or I should not be engaged in activity. I like this and therefore I want to run towards it. I don't like, so therefore I run away from it. I need to grasp it and I need to loosen my grip on it. Nothing like that. Mm-hmm. And therefore no attachment, no likes, dislikes. Such a mind is called perfect mind. Such a mind is called Nigruvitasya Manasa. So let us chant this stanza and we will see exactly what the teacher is trying to point out here. As I told you yesterday before we ended the class, a natural doubt can come in the mind of a student, because Gaudapada Acharya has previously said that just as you do not see any duality in the deep sleep, you see duality in the waking state, mm-hmm. you see duality in the dream state, right. But in the deep sleep state you don't see duality, mm-hmm. and you don't see duality because the mind is not functional. Therefore a natural doubt may come in a seeker's mind, whether Gaudapada Acharya is talking about equating knowledge of the Brahman or the Turiya, as we know, with the sleep experience. So therefore here he will say it is not so, it is completely different from sleep experience. So let us read this stanza number 34. Nigruhitasya manaso.
Nigruhitasya
manaso. Nirvikalpasya dhimataha.
Nirvikalpasya dhimataha.
Prachara satu vigneyaha.
Prachara satu vigneyaha.
Susupteno na tat samaha. Susupteno na tat samaha. So let us understand first of all what is different between the experience of a jnani, a wise person, and the experiencer of a deep sleeper. Now, as I also told you yesterday, the deep sleeper, we don't need to recognize it only as a deep sleeper, but we also need to recognize that he is also equating a deep sleeper with a yogi who is practicing meditation with nirvikalpa samadhi. So samadhi are of two kinds. So vikalpa samadhi with thoughts, nirvikalpa samadhi without. So therefore he is saying that these experiences of the sleeper, deep sleeper, or the experience of somebody who is doing a yogic practice of nirvikalpa samadhi are both in dvaita. Mm-hmm. So we will immediately say, wait a minute, how can you say there is dvaita? Because just a while ago you said that in the deep sleep there is no dvaita and there is no mind, and therefore you are experiencing that state all the time. So what? How can you say it is dvaita? It is dvaita in the potential form. Okay. In other words, both the deep sleep experience and the experience of the nirvikalpa samadhi is for a period of time. Mm-hmm. It is time bound. When that time is over, when that period is over, the entire world will be available to us in its ferociousness immediately. Therefore, we can say that yes, while we don't experience the dvaitism, we don't experience the duality in that particular period, the duality is potentially existing to burst forth at any time. So therefore, sleeper only dissolves the duality temporarily. And a nirvikalpa samadhi also in the person who is performing that is also dissolving the duality for a period of time. On the other hand, for the one who has woken up to his real self, one who has woken up to his reality, that person is seeing mithya. He is perceiving the world, he is perceiving the duality, but he knows it is not really there. So the perception of the duality continues. But because he knows this perception is wrong, therefore he can function without coming under the sway of duality. This is just like saying that while we continue to see the sky as blue, even after scientifically we have learned that it is not blue in color, while we continue to mention the sunset and sunrise, while we know that it is not the sun is setting or the sun is rising, the earth is actually rotating. Similarly, the jnani, the person who has woken up to his real essence, real tattvataha, he knows or knows or recognizes that this duality is only mithya, that it is not really there. And therefore, his entire behavior, his entire transaction with this duality will be completely different. So therefore, that way he will actually negate this. So let us now see if we can understand the stanza in the same light. So here he says, in the second line, Pracharaha, manasa prachara, behavior of the mind, dhimata for the jnani, for one who has woken up to his real essence. Through sharp discrimination, we can say. And where the discriminations come about? Because buddhi is mentioned. Dhi is mentioned. So buddhi is important for viveka. Viveka is the very first step for spiritual progress. So through sharp discrimination between what is real and what is unreal, he has prepared his mind. And so therefore, behavior of his mind is nigruhitasya. Is completely, perfectly controlled. And therefore, there is no vikalpa in his mind. There are no projections in his mind. There is no prapancha in his mind. This is indicated by nirvikalpasya. So nirvikalpasya, there are no projections in this mind. Satu vigneya. But you please understand that susupti anyana tatsam. That when there is no projection and there is absence of any experience, there is absence of duality completely, in susupti, it is anya, it is different. That experience is different. Not that sama, there is no similarity between that experience and the experience of the realized mind. Okay? So that is how this 34 stanzas we have now explained. Now let us move on to the 35th stanza. So here again the same topic is continuing. How is the sleep different? Now let us look at it a little bit more before we actually see the stanza. How is the sleep different? In sleep, the mind is subdued because of ignorance. So no knowledge has taken place. In fact, total ignorance has happened. In the case of Mahatma who is realized, total knowledge has taken place. In the case of somebody who is in deep sleep, there is total ignorance. So there are two extreme opposites. Ignorance cannot stay with knowledge. Knowledge cannot stay with ignorance. So we know, we cannot say, I'm ignorant about this, but I know it. Or you cannot say that, yes, I have no ignorance about it. Absolutely no ignorance about it, but I don't really know it. So either way you cannot say it. So therefore, it is just light and darkness. When knowledge comes, ignorance goes. You cannot say ignorance exists, but knowledge is still there. So therefore, the experience of the Mahatma, the experience of the one who has actually woken up to his real nature, it is through perfect control of the mind. That means no impressions are there in the mind. No vrittis are arising. That means no thoughts are arising. The mind is not drowned in ignorance at all. And the end result of that experience is that the person will become fearless like Brahman. So we say Brahman is fearless. Why Brahman is fearless? Because Brahman, without Brahman there is nothing else. So usually we have fear from something else. If we are fearful of a person, that is that person may hurt me. Or if we love some person very much, we say that person may leave me. Or if it is a thing that I want to acquire, I'll say, oh, I want to acquire it. Until I acquire, I will have to go through a lot of things, but I'm going to acquire. I have fear of that. And if I acquire it, then I say, oh, if I lose it, I'm fearful that I may lose it, that I have temporarily acquired it. Therefore, all the fear is because of multiplicity of experience. So therefore, this person, one who is having this Brahmakar or Tadakar with the experience, and we'll explain that a little bit later. Such a person remains in mindless anubhuti. Such a person remains in mindless anubhuti means he remains in this experience of oneness at all times while he is still seeing the differences. So this is to say that for this Mahatma, the appearance of the snake on the rope has merged back into the rope. The appearance of the snake on the rope has merged back into the rope. And once he has understood that this is rope alone, although it still looks like a rope, he is not going to be fearful of it. Because he is convinced, he had this experience, that it is rope and rope alone. Okay, so this idea is brought about in the stanza number 35. Let us look at it. Liyate hi susupte tat. Liyate hi susupte tat. Nigruhitam na liyate. Nigruhitam.
ಸಂಶಯಂ ನಲೀಯತೆ ತದೇವ ನಿರ್ಭಯಂ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ತದೇವ ನಿರ್ಭಯಂ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಜಾನಾಲೋಕಂ ಸಮಂತತಃ ಜಾನಾಲೋಕಂ ಸಮಂತತಃ ಲೀಯತೆ ಹಿ ಸುಸುಪ್ತ ಇಸ್ ನೌ ಕಾಂಟ್ರಾಸ್ಟಿಂಗ್ ದ ಡೀಪ್ ಸ್ಲೀಪ್ ಸ್ಟೇಟ್ ವಿತ್ ದಿಸ್ ವಿತ್ ದಿ achievement of my real nature or turiya, let us say turiya, because I don't want to keep on saying the real nature. Turiya will actually make sense. I think we all understand what is turiya or chaturtha pada. If you want to go by the language that the Upanishad uses, turiya is used by Gaudiya Padacharya, chaturtha pada is used by the Upanishad. So either both are the same. So liyate hi susupte, in the deep sleep the mind is subdued. Liyate, it has gone to sleep. It is subdued. It is not active anymore. And tat nigruhitam naliyate. In the case of the person who has come to recognize his real self, who has woken up to the reality, in his case, the mind has not gone into sleep. Mind is not in total darkness. Mind is not in total delusion at all. In fact, his mind is very active. And we can say that the Jnani has become Brahman. Jnani has Tadeva Nirbhayam Brahmana. So when the teacher says here, Gaudiya Padacharya says that he has actually at the time of this experience, as this experience happens and he has woken up to his real nature, not during only that time, once that experience has happened, once that subjective experience has happened, tat eva nirbhayam brahma. After that, this jnani, this mahatma, has become just like Brahman, fearless. So one qualification of Brahman is given. We have already discussed what is fearlessness, so I will not go into that. Then he says, jnana lokam samantata. Jnana means knowledge. Lokam means the light of consciousness. So in the light of consciousness, this knowledge has occurred. In the light of consciousness, this knowledge has occurred. Now every time we hear this light of consciousness, and every time we see the example of a sun, or sometimes we take the example of a bulb, or Natya Deepa, as in Panchadasi chapter, for example. We have this notion that light is like a light. Shankaracharya has removed this notion in Aparoksha Anubhuti very, very clearly. So this light that is mentioned here is not like an objective light. It is not like a flashlight. It is not like the light of the bulb. It is even not like the light of the sun, because in the light of the sun, darkness will be dispelled and light alone will pervade. If we enter a dark room and turn the light on, and the bulb will actually remove the darkness. It will not reveal the room as it was when we entered. The light of consciousness reveals as things as they are. That is the difference between an objective light and a subjective light of consciousness. So the light of consciousness reveals darkness. Whereas the objective light will actually reveal all the details in the room by removing the darkness. So therefore we have to make this distinction in our understanding to make sure that this light of consciousness is not somehow, we are not objectifying it, the light of consciousness, as a source of ordinary objective light. And then samantata means this light is all pervading. In fact, it is in this light of consciousness that all experiences are happening. What do you think is happening right now? You are seeing me through this screen. I am seeing some of you through the screen. So we can say that I'm experiencing you, you are experiencing me because of the eyes. But then if we go a little deeper, we have to say, well, it is not because of the eyes. Because the eyes definitely are creating the image. But it is because of the presence of the mind that I am distinguishing all of you as a different and distinct personality. And I recognize who you are. Because eyes do not have the capacity to recognize who you are. Therefore, it is the mind because of which the eyes are working, because of which I am able to do interaction with you. But then if we go deeper than that, we recognize that it is not mind also. Mind is also functioning in the light of consciousness. So it is in the light of consciousness. It is in that awareness that all my experiences are happening. So every moment of my transaction, every moment of my existence, it is that consciousness because of which I know I am here, I know I exist, and I can do transaction through the instrument of mind and eyes, etc., etc. So that light of consciousness is samantata, it is all pervading. So it is not some little light in me, it is the light of consciousness is all pervading everywhere. It is in that light of consciousness that everything I am aware of. In fact, without that light of consciousness, I cannot be aware of anything. So it is shining my mind, it's shining my eyes, and it's also shining this entire world. In fact, we chant that not only it shines the entire world, it shines the entire cosmos. Natutra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam. Nema vidyato bhanti kuto yamati. It is that light because of which the light of the sun is there. It is that light because of which the lightning is there. It is light that light because of which the light of the lamp is there. So like that, samantata, it is all pervading. Good. Now, the wise person looks at the whole world as turiyam plus upadhi. Upadhi means that which is really not there, that which is superimposed, is called upadhi. Turiyam is a substratum, that is what is really real. And the upadhi are because of the limitations of my instrument. So a wise person therefore will see Vishwa. Again, I'm going to bring these words from the Upanishad, so I hope that you will remember those. The wise person will see the Vishwa plus Virat. That means he will see the waker eye and the waking world. He will see Tejas plus Hiranyagarbha, the dreamer eye plus the dream world. Prajna plus Ishvara, the sleeper eye plus the Ishvara. So therefore Vishwa plus Virata, Tejas plus Hiranyagarbha, Prajna plus Ishvara, all he will see, but he will see through and through pervading all of that Brahman alone. So therefore he will recognize it as Turiya alone, Brahman alone, Self alone. So how to describe this Turiya? So from stanza number 36, we will see that Turiyam is being described. Turiyam is being described. So let us chant the word, stanza 36, and we will see how Gaudapada Acharya has described to you. They're very beautiful actually. Nothing new there, we have seen that in other Upanishads also, but it makes much more sense right here. Ajam nidram aswapnam. Ajam anidram aswapnam. Ajam anidram aswapnam anamakamarupakam sukrutvibhatam sarvagnam nopacharah katham chana. This turiyam is worthless ajam. This turiyam you may call it Brahman, has, or you can call it Self, or you can call it I am therefore birthless. We go on celebrating the birth date. We go on worrying about getting older and older with every birth date after a certain number of years. Initially, when we are younger, we want to become more mature. So that's just, so everybody wants to enjoy the birth date and celebrate birth. After a certain number of years, every birth date is bringing the news to me that I'm getting older and older. We do somehow celebrate it because everybody else is celebrating it. But really speaking, I am birthless. I am Ajam. And when I say I am Ajam, therefore I am different from this gross body. Because what is born according to Vedanta is this gross body. In fact, we are told that when this gross body falls off, the subtle body, the mind and intellect, actually does not fall off. It remains to find a suitable body in which it can express it out again. So therefore, when we say Ajam, it really, for our understanding, let us say that, it means Sthula Sarira. So that means the waker I, the Vishwa. So therefore, this Vishwa is Turiya, because it says, Bhagavan, the Gaudapada Acharya says here, Ajam. Then he says, Anidram. It is without dream. So therefore, Sukshma Sarira is actually mentioned here. Because Sukshma Sarira is where we actually, Tejas is, which makes this dream experiences possible. Therefore, Anidram stands for Sukshma Sarira, Tejasa, the dreamer I. Sorry, Aswapnam, right? Did I say Anidram? Aswapnam. So, Aswapnam means the dreamer I, the Tejas, and Anidram means without sleep. So, this is Karana Sarira or Pragnya at the individual level. So, therefore, I am not the Vishwa, I am not the Tejas, I am not the Pragnya. So, therefore, I am Sarira Traya, this Turiya, this Brahman, I am beyond all these three bodies. I am not the gross body, nor the subtle body, nor the causal body. I am beyond all three bodies. And I am beyond the three states. Avasthatrayi. I am beyond the waker I. I am beyond the dreamer I. I am beyond the sleeper. I am neither one of those. Or in our language of the Upanishad, we can say, I am Padatraya. I am beyond Padatraya. I am beyond these three padas. So, Avasthatrayi Sariratraya Padatraya Vilakshana I am. And if I am such, if I am beyond all this, then I cannot have a name and a form and a shape. Because the moment I have a shape and a form, I am limited. If I am beyond all this, I am unlimited. And if I am unlimited, I cannot even be given a name. Name can only be given if I have a form and a shape and an appearance. In order for us to give something a name, I must have guna. I must have characteristic. I don't really have that because I am avastha, sarira, pada, trayi, vilakshana. I am neither one of them. This is like saying in Om Upasana, most of you have gone through the Upanishad properly. So in the Om Upasana, which is mentioned in this Upanishad, we are told that A-U-Ma refers to the waking state, U refers to the dream state, Ma refers to the deep sleep state, and the Amatra, the gap between the two Oms, refers to the Turiya. But it is in the absence of that sound that Om sound is available to us. It is on the substratum of peace. It is in the substratum of absence of sound that Om is available for our person. Similarly, it is in the substratum of Turiya that the waking experience, the dream experience, and the deep sleep experiences are possible. So therefore, it is the Turiya that is holding everything together. So I am of the nature of Turiya. I am of the nature of consciousness. And because of that consciousness, I am experiencing the three states. But I am not them. So let us see if we can get the same thing from here. Ajam anidram asvapnam. I'm now referring to the stanza 36. Ajam, birthless, anidram, without sleep, asvapnam, without dream. We already discussed it. Then anama, I'm without name. Arupam, I'm without form. So I'm without name and form. Therefore, everything that has a name and form, I am not. This is how we have to understand it. Everything that has a name and form has only a relative existence. It has no absolute existence. And therefore, I am not that. Neti, neti, neti. If I am experiencing something, neti, I am not that. I am the very witness. I am the very experiencer. I am that because of which the experiences are happening. Sukrut vibhatam. Sukrut vibhatam. I am self-effulgent. It is in my bhati that everything is available. It is in my bhati that everything, it is in my light that all the experiences are possible. So I am all-effulgent. Sarvagnyam. I am omniscient. Gurudev has taken this sarvagnam as, in the traditional sense, as omniscient, which is, of course, the way we take it. But there is also another meaning for omniscient. This sarva plus gnam. So sarva means all that is this jara prapancha, all that is achara prapancha, all that is not moving, all that is without life, all that is without spark of consciousness. And gnam means chaitanya. So therefore the existence principle and the consciousness principle, the sat and the chit, both are included in sarvagnam. So therefore I am sat chit. I am the self-effulgent consciousness which is sat chit. I give the possibility of everything to exist through my existence principle. And I give myself the possibility of awareness of that through my chit principle. And then he says, his master stroke here comes in the end. He says, na upachara katham chana. So therefore, that is my real nature. That is the Turiya avastha. I cannot say avastha also. That is the Turiya. That is the pinnacle of my knowledge. How do you get it? How do you get it? Can I get it through some upachara? Master teacher says, na upachara katham chana. It cannot be obtained by anything. What do you mean by anything? It cannot be obtained by secular activities, nor can it be obtained by religious activities. So therefore, if we do very, very good work in the society, and I do, I'm whole life I have dedicated to samaja seva. Very good.
Lata, did answer.
That is very good.
Lata, answer.
How many people will do that?
Yeah.
What will be the end result? The end result will be that my mind is completely peaceful and tranquil. I have no likes and dislikes, and I am ready to receive the knowledge. Mm. But does that relate to Turiya? No. I have to get the knowledge to get the Turiya. So it prepares me for my journey of spirituality. Then what if I do religious activities? There are two types of religious activities. Karma and upasana. Karma here refers to the karmas that are mentioned in the Vedas. So Vedic karma. Yajna, yagadi, ityadi, puja, paat, etc. etc. So this karma will also not lead to revelation of Turiya. Then what about Upasana? No, Upasana will also not lead to revelation of Turiya. Then you would wonder why. We have been told all along that I must perform Karma Yoga, I must perform Bhakti Yoga, Raj Yoga is also important. What the teacher is trying to say that all these activities are in duality. Gaudapada Acharya is pointing out all these practices are in duality. If you are doing Upasana, you are the Upasak, and the Upasya is distinct from me. As long as I have maintained that distinction in my mind, I can never reach that pinnacle. I have to transcend that ultimately. So therefore, no activity, no karma, no Upasana can really reveal my true nature. Then what will reveal? Jnana Upadesha. Upadesha of Jnana. Coming from Guru or Shastra or both. So when I obtain the knowledge through Sravana, when I reflect upon that knowledge through Manana, and so I accept the knowledge as real, then I can transform my personality through Nididhyasana. So I assimilate the knowledge through Nididhyasana. Upanishads go on saying again and again and again, that through Sravana, Manana, Nididhyasana alone, I can reach the Turiya. Through Sravana, Manana, Nididhyasana alone, I can come to know who I really am. So that is what it means here by no upachara katham chana. Okay. Let us go to the next answer. Now in the next stanza, the Turiyam is explained. The Turiyam is explained. So we know that all transactions are absent in Turiyam. That is what we mean by Prapancha Upashamam. Isn't it? Prapancha Upashamam means there are no transactions happening. Why there are no transactions? Because in Turiya, the instruments of transaction are absent. The instrument of transactions are absent. Why? Because I know that just as this world in front of me is mithya, my mind and my body is also mithya. I am also part of this world only. Don't say this world is mithya, but I am real. I am real, but which I real? I as the consciousness, existence, principle is real. Nor this body, mind and intellect. So therefore, just as this world is unreal, mithya means it is relatively real. We cannot say totally unreal because we actually experience it and we will continue to experience it after realizing. So therefore, it is given the word, its name mithya. It appears to be real, so it is a relative reality. But in a sense, it is not there. It is like the mrugjal. It is like the water that we see in sand. It is the mirage water in the sand. It appears there. And even if after I go there and I figure out that yes, this was only some sort of an optical illusion, this mirage water is not there, the mirage water does not go away. It is still there. Sand is there and mirage water is there. But not a grain of sand has become wet. Similarly, the Brahman remains impeccably pure at all times. It is not tainted by any of these things that are superimposed on it because it's only a superimposition alone. It has not really happened. It is just a superimposition. Because of what? Because of my ignorance of who I am. So therefore that ignorance needs to be removed. So this is what will be mentioned actually. So in this first sentence, first line of this stanza, the idea that is mentioned in stanza numbers 35 and 36 is continuing, which is about Turiya. So let us did I chant this?
No.
So let us chant it first. Sarvabilapa vigataha. Sarvabilapa vigataha. Sarvachinta samutthitaha. Sarvachinta samutthitaha. Suprasanta sukrutyotihi. Suprasanta sukrutyotihi. Samadhiralacho. Samadhiracalo bhaya. Samadhi rachalo bhaya. Now let us understand every word here. Sarva abhilapa vigataha. Vigataha means without. I have already given you the crux of what is coming. So let us see now. It will be very easy to understand. Sarva abhilapa vigataha. Vigataha means without. Without what? Abhilapa. Abhilapa is instrument of speech, vaak. That is what abhilapa means. So therefore the instrument of speech, Turiya doesn't have. The instrument of speech is absent. But this word sarva simply means that it is without all the other organs of senses and the organs of action. That is to indicate that neither of these organs of actions nor the sense organs, so 10 organs, 5 sense organs and 5 organs of actions, neither of this can actually lead me to meet Turiya. Turiya is without, that means what? Vigataha means what? None of these instruments can really reveal the Turiya because they are limited in their capacity. Then, sarva chinta samuttita. Chinta is the thinking instrument. So no logic, no thinking can actually lead me there. In fact, the instruments of thinking here, chinta actually indicates chatustaya antakarana. So mind, intellect, chitta and ahankar all are included here. So the grosser instruments, the subtler instruments. None of them belong to Turiya, nor can they lead me to Turiya. So sarva chinta samuttita, sarva milap, sarva bilapa vigataha. Then the question will be then, what is Turiya then? You go on saying Turiya, 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 but I don't know what is Turiya. Suprasantaha. So some positive pointers are given. Turiya is that which is prashanta, completely quiet, completely santa, completely peace, no spandana, no projections, no waves are arising. So imagine an ocean without waves. It is a vast ocean. But no waves. Now don't compare it with that lake near Chicago, because that lake also has waves because of the wind. It's not an ocean, but it does show waves. Suprasanta. Then, what is its nature? Sukrut Jyoti. Its nature is of the nature of effulgence. It is self-evident. It does not require any other pramana to see it. It reveals itself at every moment of its existence. Then we say it reveals itself, it reveals itself. Now how come I have not seen it? We are seeing it every moment. We are just not aware of it. All my experiences are because of pramana. All my experiences are because of Turiya. I am just not aware of it. So Krit Jyoti is self-evident. Samadhi Achala Abhaya. Samadhi Achala Abhaya. Achala means free from all. Achala means it is no movement at all. Achala means it does not move. So I read free from all movement. Free from all movement.
ek hi to hai, movement.
Why? Because it is everywhere.
Everywhere.
Surya can only go where it is not. Consciousness can go where it is not. Brahman can only go where it is not. It is everywhere, therefore it cannot go anywhere, therefore it is achala. And abhayaha, it is that which gives me the sense of security. So abhayaha means the sense of security, the source of security. We think that our source of security is coming from people, or from the bank balance, or the things I have acquired, or the position I have gotten. This is where we put our faith. This is where we say we are secure because of that. Vedanta tells us that that sense of security is at the wrong place. Security is not there. Security will automatically be mine if I wake up to my real nature. Abhaya. And samadhi, I think we did not discuss that. So samadhi here has two meanings. One is the very common meaning, which is that it is the samadhi which we acquire with mental exercise. So with my focused, one-pointed mind, what I acquire is samadhi. And this focused mind is actually also called samadhana. And that is also an important pointer, because in fact, I have to do all my progress through mind only, up to the last point, up to the last minute, up to the realization, where I'll be sucked into that higher orbit. Until then, I have to progress my spiritual knowledge through mind only. So therefore, that meaning is also correct. But samadhi also means sarva adhisthana. It is the substratum of everything. It is on which everything is superimposed. If rope was not there, snake could not have been superimposed on it. So it is through and through, when we are seeing the rope, it is through and through every cell of the snake, it is rope only. They are not two different entities. Snake and rope will not be, they will not be able to exist separately at all. If I remove the rope, you will not be able to see the snake. So they exist anyonya bhava. They exist with anyonya, with dependent upon each other. So the illusion is also because of the reality. So that real rope, actually, even when we are seeing the illusion of the snake, the real rope is pervaded through and through the snake. So that adhisthana. So don't think of that adhisthana as a tabletop. So like I said, I brought my phone and I put it on top of the table. So therefore, table is the adhisthana for my phone. No, there are no two different things. Adhisthana is the substratum, is that which is pervading through everything. It is not like a carpet on which I have put my furniture. It is the substance that pervades through and through all the furniture of wood. For example, the wood is as a substrate, is pervading through all the wooden furniture. Gold as a substrate is pervading through all the golden ornaments. Like that, Brahman is pervading through all this multiplicity of Srushti. So that is another meaning. So therefore, suprasantaha sakrit jyoti samadhi achala abhayaha. Now let's go to the next stanza. So some more points about Turiya here is also given. Let us chant stanza number 38. We will try to finish 38 and 39 today. It may take a little few more minutes, but let us do it. Graho na tatra no sarga. Graho na tatra no sarga. Chinta yatra na vidyate. Chinta yatra na vidyate. Atma sansam tada jnanam. Atma sansam tada jnanam. Ajati samatam gatam.
Ajati samatam gatam.
So graho natatra na utsargaha. In Turiya, there is no transaction possible at all, because no instruments of transactions are available. The instruments are mithya, as well as the multiplicity is also mithya. So that will be like saying that mithya is doing transaction with mithya. Unreal is doing transaction with unreal. So therefore, na graha, na utsargaha. Graha means actually to grasp. Agraha means to give up. So no transactions are possible. Nothing to take, nothing to give up. Nothing to absorb, nothing to reject. No transactions possible. Then, after agraha comes, chinta yatra na vidyate. Not only no transaction is possible, no mental perceptions are also possible. So therefore, there are no perceptions, no projections, and therefore mind is not actively projecting at all times, as in our waking state and the dream state. Really, when will that happen? The teacher says, tada atma sanspaha. This will happen when I am established in myself. And how did I establish in myself? Through jnanam. This is important. Because we feel that I can establish in myself through karma yoga, bhakti yoga, these are all very helpful. Raja yoga, hatha yoga, those are all very helpful. But without knowledge, I cannot establish. I have to have the knowledge of who I am. So the root cause of the problem is, I don't know who I am. The root cause is, I am ignorant about who I am. Therefore, I must replace the ignorance through the knowledge. So therefore, the teacher says, jnanam ajati samatam gatam. Ajati samatam gatam. So this jnanam remains changeless, and this jnanam is unborn. You cannot say that I have gotten the jnanam when I realize. I have only recognized that I was that at all. Be careful. You cannot say that now I am realized. Yesterday I was not realized, but I am realized today because I got the jnanam, I got the knowledge about who I am. You cannot say that, because we will recognize that I always had that knowledge. I had temporarily forgotten. And I have now recovered my memory. Just as Arjun says to Krishna in Bhagavad Gita chapter 8. Right? Smriti Labdhva, I have now gotten the memory back. So I know who I am. Karishyetam Vachanam, I will do whatever you ask me to do, because now I have no fear. I will fight this war. I have become fearless. This is exactly the point that Gaudapada Acharya is pointing. So therefore, through jnanam, I become atmasanstam. And when I become established in the self, I am in Turiya. I am enjoying the Turiya. And at this Turiya, there is no transaction, either through the gross instruments, nor through my mind. So, ajati samatam gatam. I become changeless, immutable, in one homogeneous isotope. So, at this time of knowledge, therefore, the revelation takes place when my mind creates akhandakara vritti. Vritti means thought, akhandara or brahmakara vritti. So this vritti is centered in Atma. And I as a jnani, I as the knower, I as a wise person, will look at everything everywhere as nothing other than Turiya or Brahman alone. Turiya and Brahman are one the same. So therefore, this whole world, this body of mind, this mind of mine, these thoughts of mine, are all nothing other than Brahman plus Namarupa, which is Mithya. Now Brahman is not Mithya. Brahman plus Namarupa means Namarupa is Mithya. So I will perceive everything as nothing other than superimposition, projections on Brahman alone. This knowledge is called Ajati or Turiya. This is ever-changeless, birthless knowledge called Ajati or Turiya. So with that, I think we have seen this stanza. Let us see number 39. Now here in stanza number 39, which is very simple actually, another name is introduced by Gaudapadacharya. We have seen this name actually. In other scriptures also it is called Asparsa Yoga. So previously, Gaudapadacharya talked about Turiya as Atma Satya Anubodha. Anubodha, definitive knowledge that Atma, the Self, is the truth and is the only truth. Atma Satya Anubodha. If you go back, you will see that that is how he started describing the Turiya. Here he brings about another word. He says, this Asparsa Yoga. Asparsa means Asanga. So what is Asanga? Atma is Asanga. And that happens through Jnana. So let us read stanza number 39. Asparsa Yoga Vai Nama. Asparsa Yoga Vai Nama. Durdasa Sarva Yogi Bihi. Durdasa Sarva Yogi Bihi. Yogino Vipyati Yasma. Yogino Vipyati Yasma. Abhaye Vayadarshinaha. Abhaye Vayadarshinaha. So the name of this is Asparsa Yoga. This yoga, Asparsa Yoga, is the name. And it is durdasa. It is not easy to acquire. It is not easy to acquire by sarva yogini. Not easy to acquire by everybody. Only few will be able to acquire it. Why? Because yoginaha vibhyati asmat. All the seekers are fearful that what will happen when I am drawn into my real nature. Will I lose everything? Will I lose my mind? Will I lose my bank balance? Will I lose my kitchen kin? Will I lose my house? What will happen? This fear actually keeps you away from recognizing your nature. In fact, he says, Abhaye Bhaya Darsana. That which actually will give you the fearlessness. Right now you are fearing that very thing which will give you the fearlessness after waking up to that reality. So with that, this stanza is over. I think there is not much to discuss here. You understand what is being said. Now, from the next stanza, stanza number 40, topic will change. The last topic of this chapter will be there. So in the last few stanzas, I believe from 31 to 39, the nature of Atma was indicated to us. Now we will be told that Savana Manana is complete. We must do Nididhyasana. So the topic for discussion is Nididhyasana. From stanza number 40 to 49, and then 50 is the summary. So what I will do in the next class is I will quickly summarize some ideas, and then it will be very, very easy for us to go through stanzas 40 through 49, because then whatever is in the stanzas will appear very simple to understand. Okay. And that will be done within an hour or so, hopefully less than that. And then we will launch into discussion. So what I would like to do is to not call it a question and answer session, but discussion session, in the sense that since we have been studying this for a long time, someone may actually want to give their own meaning or some may want to describe something in more detail, or if somebody has a doubt, someone else may be actually able and willing to answer to that doubt. So it's a free discussion. And of course, I will also take part in it. But it is not necessary that all the questions are addressed to me. It's not necessary that I'm going to give the answer, because that answer will only belong to that person who asked the question. Maybe not even. So if everybody is involved in the discussion, then it becomes your question. Then it is easier to get more out of it, and we also get the benefit of everybody else who have been this path of spirituality. So with that, I will end the class today. Thank you very much. Let us do the Santi part, and we will gather for the last session tomorrow at the same time. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.